Many of you are familiar with Beth, but Beth Reeder Johnson is an individual, family, and couples therapist with over 12 years of working experience working with children, adolescents, adults, couples, and families. She's also a certified Imago therapist trained to help couples communicate, resolve conflict, and to connect. And before she was in her current private practice, which she began in 2008, she was an individual and family therapist at Children's Medical Center in the Center for Pediatric Psychiatry. She's also worked as a therapist and the program manager for Dallas MetroCare Services, which is the Westside Family Clinic. And also importantly, as many of you already know, Beth is also a member of the church. She's married to Scott, and they have an 8-year-old son themselves. So she'll not only be talking about what she does professionally, but also what she does with her own family. So we couldn't be more excited to have Beth with us here this morning. So I'm going to ask you to join me in welcoming Beth. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, I want you to imagine for a second that you're 14 years old and you're starting high school. And at first, it seems really exciting. You've planned all summer, what am I going to wear on that first day, assuming it's not a uniform. And you walk into high school, and it is exciting. And then there are different people in your classes, and you're meeting new people. And it all seems really great. But on the other hand, some of your oldest best friends are on a totally different schedule, and you feel like it's hard to connect with them. And as the semester goes on, what becomes apparent is this is getting really serious now. Everywhere you go, people are starting to talk about these grades matter. College, 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 college. Oh, and did we mention that these grades count for college, right? And then you're getting off to kind of a rough start because some of these teachers feel hard to connect with, and the material feels harder, and it all feels strange, and you don't get those A's on the first two tests. So then you get a little bit of a scuffle going on at home. Are you really studying enough? Are you really taking this seriously? Do you realize these grades matter? College, 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 college. And then, back to your old friends. You went to a party at a friend's house, and it's a house you'd gone to before, and your parents and their parents know each other, but there were new kids there. And one of the kids brought a bottle of vodka. And so some of your old friends went around to the side of the house, and people started taking shots. Totally unbeknownst and unknown to the parents inside. But you didn't feel like that was the right thing to do. So you're feeling stressed out and kind of disconnected from those friends. And at first, everything seems okay. You're still sitting together at lunch. You're still in the larger group text. But you realize that there's other communication happening that you don't know about because you're following their Snap stories and their Instagram, and they start doing things on the weekend where you are not included. So as the semester rolls on, you are feeling really stressed out. On the school front, am I going to be able to perform like I did before? Because now it matters. On the home front, do my parents trust me? Do they trust me that I'm working hard enough at my sport or at school? And do they trust me that I didn't go around on the side of the house, but they don't even know that that happened? And they don't even know that my friends and I are having this kind of divide. So then, one night, 2 weeks before exams, at the pinnacle of my stress, my dad starts talking to me that I don't have good life skills, that my room is a disaster, that I'm not following up on doing dog poop, and that I haven't been nice to my sister. And I start to feel like I'm going to come unglued. And all of a sudden, we're all yelling, and I'm saying, you don't understand anything about me, and I'm loud, and I'm angry, and I start crying, and I don't know if I'll be able to stop. And the parents are like, ugh, what just happened? Teenagers, who knows? Who can understand them? And I think this happens to a lot of the kids that I see. On one side, I work in a private practice where I see kids 10 and up, but the majority of my practice in the late afternoon times is adolescents, tweens and teens, if you will. And my work with Safe Conversations, it's a nonprofit organization, and I'm just a volunteer there. But one of the things that happened, Safe Conversations came about because couples were having such a hard time connecting. And Harville Hendricks is a longtime, world-renowned family therapist, and he wanted to take one city and see if he could make a difference with couples. Well, I've spoken at the Adolescent Symposium, and I've used this work in my practice, not only with couples, But with teenagers and parents, it's incredible. And so now we've started a teen workshop during the larger couples workshop where we're teaching. So while parents are learning these skills, teenagers are learning them at the same time. So last week, I got to be with the teen Bible study here at church. And it was so cool. The way they've got that set up is really nice. I think that's a little close to my face. Is that better? Yeah, not reverberating. Anyway, the way they've got the teen program set up here is wonderful. But we did exactly what I'm going to show you now. It's a model. But the model is there because sometimes we can't keep things safe. And teenagers tell me, either in the workshops or in my office, that the only time my parents want to talk to me is if they want to lecture me. Or they want to follow up on something on my to-do list. Or they want to tell me what I should or shouldn't be doing. Or they want to check on my grades. Or they want to give me tips on how I didn't practice hard enough on my sport and what I could have done better after my game. So it kind of feels like, I mean, imagine if you were in a work situation and you felt like this was all that was happening. Well, and it does, right? Sometimes some of us feel very micromanaged in our work or in our life situations, but it just feels to them like the only thing anybody cares about is what's happening on the outside. And there's all this stuff happening on the inside. So, working with parents on how to tap into that is where this model comes in. How to tap in on what's really happening internally for them, so that they don't just feel like you're doing this big check-in and you're always doing teaching, which some of that you have to do, right? I mean, it's a complicated relationship because you're the gatekeeper of their freedom. So there's going to be a natural struggle. But I also think there's a huge misconception that teenagers don't want to be connected to their parents, because every teenager I know wants to be connected to their parents. They don't always want to be bossed around. They don't always want to be told what to do, but they do want the connection. So it's interesting to find a way to have that connection and still really do your job as a parent. And what you'll find, I think, is that when you're connected, that job becomes easier. There's a concept called understanding the otherness of another person. And it sounds like, ugh, of course, you and I are separate. We get that. If we were walking along and talking, I would want to find out about you and get to know you because I don't know you. But it's funny, with people closer in our lives, we don't accept their otherness as much. This happens a lot between spouses. You know, you see something one way and they see it a different way. And man, I'm going to work hard to wear you down and make you think that I'm right. I'll blame you, I'll shame you, I'll criticize you. Instead of just getting that you're a whole nother person with a whole nother sense of yourself, and I can just accept that and try to connect with you, and then it might be actually easier to work together. Well, the same thing happens with our kids. And the complicated thing is they're in the phase of development. Their whole phase of development is, who am I? So on top of having to worry about getting into college and worrying about whether or not they're going to give in to peer pressure and how they're going to keep connected with a friend that is trying different things or has different values at this particular point in time than they do, they're also trying to think, who am I? I don't know. I'm looking in the mirror and I'm trying to figure it out. And when I look at my parents, often I say, okay, I'm not you and I'm not you. And the parents who get that and don't take it personally as a personal attack that their kid doesn't want to be them, that they're just going to try on, who am I? And I'm not talking about bad decision making or any of that. I'm really just talking about internally. Who am I? What do I believe in? And a parent that can say, I get that you're going through that. You don't have to be me. You don't have to be dad. We can hear what you're thinking and sit with it and mirror it back to you and say, I get you. We can even validate it. You know, it's funny. I've talked to parents a lot about, you could even have a whole conversation about something you really didn't believe in, letting them say it, and then at the end say, you know what? What this brings up for me is, this doesn't seem like a good idea, but I guess you're going to have to think through that. If you want to hear why I don't think some of these things are a good idea, I get why you feel this way, but you can still then, after they've been heard, say what you need to say. Does that make sense? Anyway, we're going to do the model. We're going to practice the model up here. The coolest thing is, okay, so I have an 8-year-old son. He's the best person at safe conversations in my family, bar none. along with the overall program, there's something called zero negativity. We're not going to get into that as much today, but it's a nice idea, and it's a nice way to try to be. I have yet to go one single day of my entire life doing total zero negativity, so I'll just own it, you know, either internally or externally. I always say you can't control your first thought, but you can control your second thought. In my family, in the program, if somebody says something that you think is negative, shame, blame, criticize, you can have an ouch or some other code word. And you can get your families all in on that. It's fun. In my family, ouch came across even as negative to us, so we say, I need a Band-Aid. And the best person at doing it is my son. And I'm the most impatient sometimes when I think we're going to be late. And so I'm like, get in the car. He's like, I think I maybe need a Band-Aid, Mom. I'm like, okay, can you please get in the car? But what it's done, it's allowed him to have a voice. And it's allowed him to know that no matter what, he deserves to be treated with respect, even if he's going to have a consequence. And if he doesn't act nice, he's still going to spend time in his room or have to write an apology letter or do whatever needs to be done. But just that he has a voice and he gets to be his own person. And he gets to say if something feels good or doesn't feel good for him. So there's that distinction. But, okay, so we're going to have a demo first. Oh, first, the handouts. Okay, so I gave you the handouts, and this was really the first page. Oh, it's okay. The first page was really just to show you the parts of the model so that when you get home, and if you remember, and if you want to walk through this with your kids if they weren't here last week, because I know it's weird because some of the kids that were here weren't here with the parents that are here this week. But the asking for an appointment is really important because what you're doing, you're making sure it's a good time for them, and you're teaching them to make sure it's a good time for you. Because there will be times it's not a good time for you. Hey, Mom, is it a good time to talk? And you're like, no, I'm right in the middle. Pasta's going to be ready in 3 minutes. I can't do that right now, right? But I would love to talk to you as soon as we finish dinner and get things cleaned up. If you'll help me clean up and do dishes, I'll be able to talk to you quicker. It's also that it gets your prefrontal cortex from a neuroscience standpoint. If this is our brain, brainstem, spinal cord, this is our middle brain, if you will, our hippocampus and our amygdala, that's our emotion center. This is our prefrontal cortex. When we're talking to our children about something that's important, we want to make sure that they haven't already flipped their lid. If they've flipped their lid, you're not going to be able to have a safe conversation. You got to wait at least 27 minutes for everything to be able to come back online. I'd say maybe a different day. So everybody's going to make sure we're here. So if I say, I've got something to talk to you about, it's now a good time, and you're like, yeah, I'm available, we're making sure we're connecting prefrontal cortex to prefrontal cortex. Nobody's already so upset that they flipped their lid. So that's important. The next piece on this is just specifying the topic. You want your kids to know what's coming. You want your spouse to know what's coming. I'd like to talk to you about the taxes. Is now a good time? I'll normally always say no to that one. No, it's not a good time. No. If you say no, it's not a good time. It's your responsibility then to come back and say yes when it is a good time. If you're with a kid, I'd like to talk to you about your grades. Is now a good time? Then they know what's coming. Or I'd like to just talk to you and have a check-in about your day and your life. Is now a good time? So it's asking that so it gets them even more ready. The deep breathing that's on these couples do the deep breathing together. You make eye contact and you take three really big deep breaths together. Some of your teenagers will not do this with you. I've gotten people to do it in my office. I think they feel captive in my office, so they feel like they have to. But I realize at home that may not happen. I will tell you, for two couples I've been working with, the breathing has changed their sessions. Because it gets people, again, we communicate with each other in all these ways. I would, next life, I'm going to be, not really, but I mean, I wish I could have been a neuroscientist as well, because we're understanding so much more about the brain and how we connect in ways that we don't even know. But there's something about looking, making eye contact, and taking these deep breaths that you feel safe with the other person before the conversation even starts. So I've seen it work. If you could get your kid to do it, great. If they're like, I'm for sure not going to stare at you and breathe, then ditch it. Sender responsibility. There may be a little teaching, and sender responsibility is using I statements. It doesn't matter if you're talking to a spouse or to your teenager. I feel upset when this happens, or I'm concerned about this, versus you. Most of us have heard that before. The receiver responsibility is pretty big in the model, and this is why we start out learning appreciations, because it's kind of hard to contain and just hear, especially if it's something you don't agree with. So if your kids start saying, I'm not sure I want to be a Christian anymore, which has come up in my office before. And this mom, I will say, we had a 30-minute conversation, and she handled it brilliantly. She was able to hear. And I'm not sure the kid wasn't just trying to get a rise out of her, truthfully. And sometimes they will. They're like, I'm going to see if you can accept my otherness, so I'm going to say something really outrageous and see if I can get you to just flip your lid or if you'll really hear me. And the mom was able to just say, okay, tell me more about that. Tell me more about that. Okay. So I get it. You're feeling conflicted about where you stand with God. I get that. And she was able to just sit with it and listen. And then she said, I imagine you feel maybe a little scared by this and even a little sad. And then she said, at the end of it, can I tell you what this brings up for me? And he said, sure. And she said, well, it brings up for me that you've got quite a lot of struggle and maybe some decisions, and I hope you'll really research that. And if you need my help, I'm available. But I also want to let you know, in the rules of our house, we go to church on Sunday mornings. And so while I can't control what you're thinking, we do still want to do this together as a family. So she was able, and it was fine. And he was over it in 6 weeks. I mean, it was like, but that's where being able to sit with whatever they're processing through and whatever they're doing helps it not get bigger, you know? Because sometimes if we react in such a strong way, yes, you are a Christian. Yes, you are doing this. Yes, you know, then it's like, no, I'm not. And I'm getting my nose pierced. And I'm going to get a tattoo. You know what I mean? Goes off crazy. The last couple of things is the curiosity question. I just want you to know as we start to go through this that all of it is intentional. The is there more question is beautiful. Because what we're trying to do with another human being is go from being defensive, who are you, you're a teenager, I may not trust you, to curious, who are you, I want to know who you are and what's happening with you. And it's the same thing with our spouse, right? Instead of defensive, curious. I don't know why you're doing what you're doing, but can you help me understand it? Versus, why are you doing what you're doing? Right? And so that is there more helps allow full exploration of that conversation to happen. Instead of, are you done? Are you finished yet? It's just it's a really different thing. And then the last two are the validation. You make sense. Sometimes not all of it will make sense to you. So you're trying to imagine, I'm very visual, so if I have an island and you have an island, I'm trying to imagine what it might be feeling like. It doesn't have to make sense to my island. Silly example is I went to Argentina. They were taking their children to dinner at 10 o'clock at night when my sister and I were leaving. And I said, gosh, I'm wondering what this is about. And I was really curious. And we were talking to somebody that lived there about it later. And they were like, well, they go to work at 10. They have a siesta, da, da, da. So I get it. It makes sense for them. I am not taking my child to dinner at 10, right? It's not going to happen on my island. But I get it for them. So that's where you want to be. I'm trying to understand what it's like for you. And saying I get it is not saying I agree. It's not saying I agree with everything you're saying. It's just from where you're coming from, I get you. And then the empathy is, if you're, you know, after all that struggle and hearing the 14-year-old girl, you said, God, I didn't know all this was going on with your friends. I imagine you feel sad. I imagine you feel like there's a lot of school stress. I get it. You know? So it's just ending with that empathy. And did I get that feeling right? Is that what you're feeling? And then there's a thank you for sharing and a thank you for listening. And it feels formal. Some of the kids last week, some of the kids in earlier workshops have said it feels formal at first, but especially in our full-day workshops, by the end, usually what they're saying is, do you think we could really get my parents to do this? Huh. So it's easy to say, oh, my kids would never engage in this. But it's worth a try, because when they feel like they can really be heard, which Madeline Levine wrote the great book, The Price of Privilege, and all these studies across the country, that's the number one thing kids want, is just to be heard. You know? So, okay. Y'all want a demo? So you want to sit, if you're at home, face to face. So like dining room chairs work great if you don't have a natural seating area that's face to face. I'm going to be the moderator, so you don't have to bring your scripts.
I volunteered.
He did. They nicely volunteered. Okay, and I'm going to get y'all each a mic. Here we go. So we're just going to do it, right now we're just going to do it one way, but when you all practice, we'll have you practice, and then we'll have you switch. So we're just going to do sharing and appreciation, which is a nice way to learn it, to learn the model, which doesn't leave anyone feeling defensive. I've also given you a script for sharing a frustration or a problem that you can also have to use at home. So who would like to send?
I'm happy to.
You want to share? Okay. So I'd love to share an appreciation. Is now a good time?
I'd like to share an appreciation. I appreciate that you make me feel so loved and special.
So what I'm hearing you say.
I'm about to cry.
That's okay.
I get you. I understand.
No, so you're going to just mirror it back word for word. Oh. So what I'm hearing you say is.
What I'm hearing you say is that you appreciate me because I keep you safe. And you love me.
So he didn't quite get that. So say, let me try to resend.
Let me try to resend. I appreciate how you make me feel so loved and special.
I appreciate the fact that you... I'm struggling.
Okay, so what I'm...
I didn't prepare. I volunteered, but I didn't prepare.
No, this is why we demo it. So what I'm hearing you say is that you appreciate that I make you feel loved and special.
Right.
So try that on.
I'm understanding. I hear you say that I make you feel loved and special. Sorry.
Did I get it?
Yes.
Is there more?
Is there anything more? There's 13 more.
Yeah, that's right.
Just about this one thing. So you started with a feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And you could go to...
I appreciate how when I walk in the door, you'll ask how my day is. That's a small thing that you do that... shows me that you love me.
So what I'm hearing you say is
you appreciate the fact that I acknowledge your presence and am happy to see you and hear what you did that day.
Yes.
And this reminds me of from my childhood.
This reminds me of my childhood of feeling safe and loved in my home and in my environment that I grew up in.
So I make you feel safe. And like you're young and...
I'm glad I got this in.
Yeah, no kidding.
And it reminds you
of being at home and safe as a young child.
Yes.
I'm glad I'm able to provide that.
Yeah. Okay. Is there more?
Anything more?
Okay, so in summary... I know, I'm sorry. I feel like I'm torturing you, but I'm really not.
I'll never volunteer again. In summary, you feel loved. You're looking at me like I'm going to get it wrong.
No.
You feel loved because I make you feel safe and comfortable at home.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything more?
No. You did the summary. That's great. So now you're going to validate. And when it's appreciation, it's easier to validate. So that makes sense, or what makes sense to me about that is...
That totally makes sense to me because you've created such a wonderful home for us both to live in.
Nice. And you imagine she feels with this appreciation. That's the empathy. I imagine you feel. You just throw a feeling out and she can say, that's right, no, that's not.
I imagine you feel very comfortable. I don't know. I'm lost.
Loved, comfortable,
warm,
grateful,
warm, safe.
And safe.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
Very good.
Okay, thank you for sharing.
Thank you for sharing.
Thank you. For listening.
For listening.
Okay, and then, if you were a couple in my practice, I'd make you do a one-minute hug, but I won't make you do that. Okay, so they went into it so quickly that the thing we missed was really checking, so it was obviously a good time because they had volunteered. But I have something to talk to you about. It's now a good time. You're trying to give the teaser of the topic an appreciation. Then you get together and then doing the breathing. So here's the deal, too. I've done this with my 8-year-old a few times, and we've sat face to face. Sometimes face to face feels like too much for him as a boy. So I think teenage boys, t- teenage girls are sometimes can't do face-to-face either. But where I found that with my son, I'll say, we'll be driving to school, and I'll look in the mirror and say, I have an appreciation to share, it's not a good time. It's my favorite. He gets this look on his face like, yeah, like, hit me with it. So I love that, you know? So you don't, where this is the setup, I think that there are ways you can sit on the couch face-to-face. You can adapt for your child, knowing your child best and how they tend to open up to you. Also, my kid talks none after school. How was your day? Fine. What did you eat for lunch? Mac and cheese. Who did you play with on the playground? Drew. Like, he's like a little zombie. But right before he goes to bed, a lot comes up. And I've talked to different parents, and they tend to get a sense of when that time is for their kid. So timing it for that, you know, I've learned this new thing and I want to share with you an appreciation. Can we do that? It's going to seem kind of silly and formal at first, but I just want you to mirror it back so I know you really got it. And then if you want to switch, we can. And a lot of times, kids will cry during these initial things where you think, oh, they won't like it at all. But it's so nice to hear an appreciation versus, have you picked up the dog poop? You know, it's nice. And it's a model, and you can say, you know, models are kind of stiff sometimes, but if we could use some of this sometimes when something big comes up and that you're scared to talk to me about and that you know it could stay safe. You know, we've got a frustration or you've got a problem or something's happening at school and you're worried that I'm going to fly off the handle. And if we use this and we sit down, you can know that I'm just going to mirror back and really trying to stay curious. Did I get it? And is there more? Does that all make sense? Yeah? Okay. Question? Yeah. Right.
Do you truly try to model it for them maybe when it's not? I mean, I'm into appreciation better than their frustration, but like, would you like a mom and a dad model so their kids can see so that they know you're not correcting them all the time?
Yeah, you could totally, yes. You could say, we've learned this thing. It's funny, it started out as a couples model. I do tease teenagers a little bit. I'm like, how do you respond right now when conflict comes up? They're like, I stomp upstairs and slam my door. And I said, but the problem is I talk to adults, couples, and those coping skills that we're learning right now when we're in distress with the person we love, that's what we usually act like when we're married. So again, this is going to seem a little stiff at first, so you can even walk through, make a copy, walk through with the script. And if you make it about appreciations, they don't have to be getting it wrong. You know, just say we're learning it together. And that's why I explained to you all, is there more versus are you done or even is there any more, you know? But yeah, if you and Philip want to model it, I mean, that's a nice way to do it too. You know, and knowing your kids, some kids that would geek them out too much. Mom and dad are doing this silly thing for me, I don't know. You know, versus making it about them, it's your family. And I will say, even with younger kids, I think it's been, again, my son's 8, and he kind of likes it. So I'm hoping he'll still like it when he's 16. I don't know.
And would you ever encourage the model that you use among siblings from one sibling to another when they're having conflict? Have you seen that?
Now? Yes, we've done that. Yes. And I've had siblings come to the larger. Again, last week when I was here, I was only here just like I'm here today for 1 hour. So it was pretty quick. I showed them the appreciation and we did a demo and they did a practice. And then, oh my gosh, and you guys have had it. We've got to make sure we have time for you all to practice. Okay, so.
What was the question?
Siblings. I'm sorry, sibling to sibling. And the answer is yes. We've had siblings in the larger workshops. See, in the larger workshops, we do the sharing and appreciation. Then we have time to practice a sharing of frustration with either a friend or your as-if parent. And then we do something so cool where we have kids write down caring behaviors. I feel loved and cared for when. And they write it as a list to their parents. Nobody puts a new iPhone on there. They all say, when you put down your phone and talk to me, when you make me feel like a priority, when you ask me about how I'm doing, when you ask me about how I'm doing without lecturing me, things like that. So it's, again, we're getting lots of feedback that they want to connect. I think they just don't know how. So even if they think this is silly on some level, if it feels good, they won't be totally opposed to it. But I want you guys to be able to have the experience today. And I know some people came with somebody and some people didn't. So even if you're not with somebody, like your partner, if we could all get into groups of two and we're going to do the sharing appreciation, if it's somebody you just met, take a few minutes and talk to them and just appreciate whatever you want. I mean, it's more for the exercise. You know, I appreciate your shoes. They're lovely. Or, you know. The only other thing I'm going to tell you is what's in the scripts that we didn't do up here is there's something, and they're called stems. I'm upset that this is happening. It makes me feel. The story I'm telling myself, that's really big with kids. Because I have a lot of times where they're like, my parents think this and this and this. And I'll say, are you sure? I've talked to your mom. I don't know. But having a way to do that check-in. Mom, the story I'm telling myself is you're really disappointed in me and you think I'm not that smart. Is that right? And then the parent can say, nope. Or, I wish you were trying harder, you know, and the follow-up. But it doesn't have anything to do with that. So that, if you're just meeting somebody, you can leave that stem out. I just put it in there because it really helps in more intimate relationships with your children to be able to say, just like, I appreciate that you always check in with me. I appreciate that I never have to ask you to text, that you're always texting and checking in where you are. And it really makes me feel safe, and it makes me feel like I can trust you. And the story I tell myself is that I don't have to worry because you're being responsible. And it reminds me of my childhood because I was pretty good at checking in. And I'm so glad that I have a kid like that too. It makes me really happy. I feel really blessed. You know, whatever that is. So those are the stems that help the conversation keep going. Okay.
The value in it being this formal versus just trying to have a conversation. I mean, this is pretty.
Right. No. And I agree. So, is there value in having it be this formal, or is it better just to have a conversation? So, if Harville Hendricks was standing here, he would say, "Talking is the most dangerous thing we do," and some people have exceptional skills and they listen really well and they're not prone to anger or defensiveness and they can really listen and take it all in. A lot of us can't do that. A lot of us, at least with the mirroring aspect, the what I'm hearing you say and did I get it and is there more? Because the other thing that happens is as it goes through our brain, sometimes we filter it in a way that's not true. I mean, I cannot tell you how many times I've been sitting with a couple or sitting with a teenager and a parent, and they're not hearing each other. Because when they mirror back, I hear a distortion. What I'm hearing you say is, you really don't like me. And the mom will say, no, let me resend. What I said is, I don't like it when you speak to me this way. So sometimes the reason for the formality is it slows it down and keep it safe, especially in times kind of high stress when it's likely to move to something else. So that's the benefit, both in a marriage and with anyone else, where it would, you know, with a child, that it could go here. So if you don't have that kid where it can get really escalated or you think you're hearing correctly, but it is nice that mirroring back to just check in, did I get it? Because sometimes, even if you're the world's best listener, or they've said it in a way that you think you heard it exactly right, and they're like, oh, that's not exactly what I meant. What I really meant is this. So sometimes they don't even know exactly what they want to say because they're not proficient communicators because they're 14 or 15. So is everybody ready to practice? We need a partner. And we're just going to literally turn your chairs like this. If there's somebody partnered, okay, you have a partner. Do you two gentlemen want to? Y'all want to be partners?
Sure.
And just try to go through the whole thing. If you will, even the deep breathing, just to see how it makes you feel. Okay. Are y'all ready to come back? Is everybody finished? So a really good question came up, and then we'll open it up if anybody else has any thoughts or feedback, which is, so if you're sharing a frustration, it's going to be pretty advanced for, so if the parent starts and you want to share a frustration and you're asking them to mirror, they may be able to do that and maybe even summarize, but when you get to the validation, that may be a big concept for them. So it may be that you do a little bit of teaching around, you know, you could tell me you get it or that it makes sense without agreeing with me. And you may just give them that language so that they see that. Empathy sometimes is hard for specific children or teenagers on a whole at times. And so, but it's good practice for, I'm imagining how you might be feeling. And you just ask them to guess a couple feeling words. Just guess. I imagine you're mad. Did I get that? I'm not really mad. I'm more kind of concerned or sometimes even sad, you know? And then really allowing for them to then say, whoever starts, the other person then around that same topic. If you're sharing a frustration, you want to only stay on that one topic on that day. And so, and then the other person can say what this brings up for me. So if you've started, your child can then say what this brings up for me. What this brings up for me is I'm trying my best, or I'm doing this, or I'm just really tired after school, or whatever. There, and you say, okay, and talking in small enough bites where I can get it and mirror it back. And if there's ever too much, you can kind of raise your hand like a pause button. So what I'm hearing you say is, and is there more? And you summarize and you empathy. The follow-up question was, so where do we get to the solution? Where behavior changes or something moves in a different direction. So there is something called a behavior change request, but I think to really sit with the idea that the connection is often what creates the environment for change. Because really, if they feel like you care about me, you care about getting me, hearing me, and at the end of a conversation where a parent shared a frustration and the kid really felt like they could listen, be listened to in their response and be heard, then at the end the parent might go, okay, that was a lot, but I feel a little bit better. Do you feel better? Yeah. Do we want to do anything differently about this today? No. Or at some point, maybe we could both do something a little bit different that would make this situation better. Or what is there one thing you might ask of me? And it, can I then ask maybe one thing of you? But having that very collaborative after the connection happens. If that makes sense. Again, I would start with appreciations.
Do you think there's almost an expectation that you would change because of what they just told you if you had empathy? Does that make sense? Like if they're telling you something that really bothers you that has to do with you or a fellow vice versa, isn't there kind of an expectation that there would be a change of some kind?
I mean, that's the model, right? Is that the empathy, and the question earlier was, with kids who maybe struggle with empathy or they don't really understand validation. So you walk them through that and knowing that the connection may be able to grow as you grow the conversations. So not have the high expectation of change on the first time. The connection is the key. And then if we connect and if we're able to kind of sense what it feels like, because I hear kids all the time say, I don't want to disappoint my parents. So if they know you feel sad or conflicted about something, that may change. And they may say, okay, I'm going to come out of my room and get off my phone for a few minutes and talk to my parents. Or I may do this differently or this differently. And as a parent, too, knowing what's all going on with them to try to not be so quick-tempered or reactionary to their isolating or whatever's kind of making us crazy, once we understand kind of what's behind that, we will have more empathy to be like, hey, is it a good time? Could you come out and join the family for a little bit? She said, it's not a good time. Okay, let me know if there's maybe a time later. And having more understanding kind of on both sides of what that looks like. But again, having those moments of connection. Any other questions or feedback?
Can you use this same technique on telephone for children that are often in college, for example?
Sure. I mean, so some kids will be like, why are you repeating back everything I'm saying? you know. But if you tell them what's coming, but I even think small amounts of mirroring done kind of subtly can work. I mean, my husband now uses it at work. He said it works great with this one employee that tends to get kind of upset, but she calms down much more quickly if he's like, so here's what I'm hearing you say. Did I get that? And then that, it's just like a one time, but I think it can help in any kind of situation to help conflict slow down that's what we're doing. We're slowing down the conversation. We're formalizing it, as you said, but we're also trying to slow it down to keep it safe and to make sure there's really understanding on both sides. Does that make sense? But yeah, I think college kids would be more open to the model as a whole too. Just saying, Mom and I learned this thing. Wouldn't this be cool to use this? You know, I don't know. Because college age kids at the workshop tend to really, I mean, like seniors, we had some seniors at this last one, and they really liked it, you know, which is sometimes harder than, and last week, the ninth grade boys tend to like it less than all the girls. So just keeping that in mind, you know, that it's, you know, sometimes I'll ask my son if he wants to talk about something, he'll say no, and then I'll just go in there. And I've had this was actually not my idea. This was a brilliant idea of one of the moms I worked with. She just said, she just asked her son if she could come into his room, and she just grabbed some pillows and lay on the floor beside his bed, even if he was doing his phone or whatever. And after about 10 minutes or so, he'd kind of start talking to her. It takes so much patience to be a parent, you know? It's like, that's a lot. Other stuff? Feedback, questions? How was it for the practice? How did that feel? Did anybody? Yeah.
The part that we had a question with the part where you say it reminds me of, and I think you used an example of your childhood, was wondering what the value of that felt a little awkward.
Okay. Yeah. So, in the model for the, and this is a work in progress, so I'm glad for you to tell me that, because the model again was designed for couples, and we've changed it just slightly for kids. So with the adult workshop, when couples are doing an appreciation or anything, saying what it reminds you of from your childhood sometimes ties in, and it can give more empathy, but it can also allow for more understanding. You know, it's weird to think you're married to somebody and they like a favorite food, and do you know why they like it? Well, you know, we eat popcorn with M&Ms in my family because my mom got pregnant in the fifth grade, and she was like an M&M monster. And she'd get these huge tubs of popcorn when we go to the movies, and she'd dump M&Ms in it. So now my whole family eats popcorn with M&Ms. It's the culture, right? So then you think to yourself, so that's your backstory. So if you and your husband are using an appreciation and you say, I really appreciate that you do this. It really reminds me of when I was a kid and my parents did this, and it just makes me feel special and loved. That's significant. Well, with a kid, they're still in their childhood, but it can still remind them of something. So sometimes if they say something like, Mom, I really appreciate, you know, when we went and we did Six Flags Family Night. It really just reminds me of all those other times we've done it since I was little, and it's really cool and important to me. And I like that we still do this as a family. You know, it can just be something that ties back that was special or important to them. And again, sometimes it's relevant, and sometimes it's not. I've had couples do an appreciation about coffee. There was nothing about coffee in their childhood. So you just, you know, sometimes that's a factor and sometimes it's not. Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed being here. If you have anything else, I'll stick around for a few minutes.